There you are. Good morning. I'm going to try something really strange this morning. I don't know if I can do it. Yeah, good morning. I'm going to do something a bit strange and weird and wonderful. I'm here on YouTube with you, obviously, but I've also just opened a microphone in the studio. So it should be streaming on richieallen.co.uk. And Fab Radio and TriggerWarning.tv as well. Why am I doing this morning? Well, I've basically got no internet other than upload. It's bizarre, really. So I couldn't do a lot of downloading and audio editing to my playout system for the radio show this morning. So I decided I'd do Sunday View on YouTube just for today. Sunday View is a radio program and always will be, but just for today, because I was hoping that yesterday my internet issues would be sorted, and they were halfway sorted. I received all the equipment, but no engineer showed up, so that's not going to be until next week. Hence, you're seeing my bleary-eyed appearance this morning here on Sunday View. Had a couple of Bacardis yesterday, and enjoyed it as well, by the way. But I hope you're well. It's Sunday the 16th of June 2019. This is Sunday View, and it's abysmal, the weather. I made a point, didn't I, on social media yesterday, on Twitter. It's incredible to watch the climate change hoaxers blaming 10 degree temperatures, because it's like 10 degrees today. It's very cold and miserable and wet in Greater Manchester. They're blaming it on climate change. Equally, this time last year, when we were basking in glorious sunshine and unbearable temperatures at times, equally, that was the cause of climate change as well. There you are. So it was a last minute idea to open to bring this mic, which this is a guest microphone, by the way. I swing this in from the other side of the desk. This is a guest microphone. I just opened it while I'm on YouTube here, and in case, obviously, it was a last minute decision to stream this live to YouTube. So people who have tuned in via richieallen.co.uk or tuned in via Trigger Warning or Fab Radio to listen to the radio, if you go to youtube.com/Richie Allen Show right now, you can watch this in glorious YouTubery. There you are. I wouldn't say glorious. Glorious is probably not right, but it's Sunday View, and we won't have any audio today. We won't have anything other than my big ugly mug and some of the newspaper stories, but there you are. Okay? You've got to roll with the punches. You've got to improvise, adapt, and overcome. You've got to never whinge about the occasional mishap. You've just got to get on with it. And that's what we do. I see there's quite a few comments already on the live chat. I will read them in a few minutes' time. We better just jump right on in there, by the way. Let's jump. Oh, before we go any further, I want to say hi to Aileen Lowe. It might be very late in the evening in New Zealand. I was right to surmise that Aileen hails from New Zealand. She won the Moldavite pendant donated by Mark Bajerski to the programme. So congratulations, Aileen. Well done to you. And I hope that pendant will make you very happy. And thanks again to Mark Bajerski. MarkBajerski.com. Top man is Mark. Where will we start today? Do you want to start with the mail on Sunday? Why not, eh? Mail on Sunday. So to the radio listeners, this is bizarre, really. You can't see anything, but if you go on YouTube, you'll see stuff. Did I just say that already? I did. It's the Bacardi. So the Mail on Sunday goes with the Oxfam horror story. Covered this last week, of course, extensively. Oxfam has been embroiled in this mess for the best part of 2-3 years now. Its senior staff were abusing children in Haiti and elsewhere. Right? And the Mail on Sunday has this story today. It's the only paper that goes with this. Apparently its new boss is being accused of the same type of cover-ups. In other words, being made aware that senior staff and workers in disaster zones were abusing children and hiring underage prostitutes. Yes. Using the money that you donated, because in good conscience and being of a decent character and having empathy, you gave money to Oxfam because you have empathy and you're decent and you think God loves those people over there with no houses. And unbeknownst to you, some of the Oxfam people, particularly the very higher ups, were using your hard-earned money and spending it on children. It's horrendous, isn't it? I mean, does it need any more from me? I don't think it does. Let's just leave that there. That's the Mail on Sunday. What about the Sunday Express today? Let's do the tabloids today. Boris' secret deal with Brexit Tories. This, well, it's self-explanatory. It's about Boris Johnson meeting with Brexiteer backbenchers like Rees-Mogg and others, doing a deal with them to get their widespread support, maybe making a few promises about cabinet appointments in the event that Johnson does become the Prime Minister. Has to be said, there is a Channel 4 debate, I think, this evening, live, and Johnson won't be there. And I understand the Channel 4 television company have said they will empty chair Boris Johnson. It's kind of inexplicable that Johnson wouldn't be there. I don't know why. I have no idea, but he's not going to be there. The other contenders will be there. And Channel 4 have said, well, we will put an empty chair where Boris Johnson should be. Yeah, there you are. No, nothing is ever a certainty. Nothing is ever a certainty in politics, of course, or in life. But Johnson would appear to be unassailable, or his polling lead, because they've been polling Conservative Party members. Johnson just needs to get down to the final two. Then the membership will vote. And it's looking like nothing can stop the man, barring the emergence of some scandal. You never know. But don't believe for a minute that Johnson is going to leave with no deal. He won't. He should, but he won't. Sunday Mirror. This is interesting. Boris accused of F-word rant over 7th of July families. This is referring, of course, to the terror attacks, the alleged terrorist attack, of the 7th of July 2005. And apparently when he was Mayor of London, Johnson ranted about having to find money for the families and money for inquests, and apparently said F the families. Apparently he denies it, and there's no proof really that he indeed said any of that. The Daily Mail goes with it inside the Daily Mail. There you go there. I'm getting better at this. Do you notice that? That was kind of smooth, wasn't it? Car crash stuff on a Sunday morning. So the Mail on Sunday has gone big with this. Johnson is accused of F the families rant, but a dispute breaks out about what he really said. This, again, was about the cost of inquests. You see? And this is the guy who's apparently accusing him of saying F the families. Don't know if he did. And I don't really know if it matters. If I can get rid of that. There you go. So that's the Express, and that's inside the Mail on Sunday. Did we do the Sunday Mirror? We did. You see? Just when it looked smooth for a minute, it all went belly up. Good morning. If you're listening on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2, or triggerwarning.tv, pop on over to YouTube and look at my big horrendous mug. Let me just have a look at the old streaming thing and make sure it's still streaming. And am I streaming? Okay? Lovely. It's streaming fine over there. Yeah, lovely. Lovely jubbly. Chief cook and bottle washer I am. Did we do the people? We didn't. Sunday people. There's going to be another Jeremy Kyle show. For my Canadian, American, Australian and New Zealand listeners, Jeremy Kyle presented a shock. Would you even call it a shock programme? What would you call it? It was a mid-morning or early afternoon programme where people a bit down on their luck with emotional issues would come on to confront their family members and to confront their boyfriends and girlfriends whom they believed had cheated on them. It was Jerry Springer, wasn't it? And it was recently cancelled because of concerns about the lack of care shown to guests on the show and their mental health issues and suicide and threats of suicide. It was all very nasty. So the Sunday People has got a story. It's claiming that there will be another similar show in the wake of the cancellation of the Jeremy Kyle show. It is really lowest common denominator television. I know we've all got kind of a morbid fascination with people. We're all capable of being, I don't know, voyeuristic in some way, you know, about people who are a bit less sophisticated maybe than we think we are in how they conduct themselves. And that's maybe the attraction for television shows like this. But there's a deeper reason that most people don't understand or don't even contemplate as to why these television shows ever came to be in the first place. I think you might agree with me there, dear listener. So the Sunday Telegraph then, May's £27 billion spending booby trap for Boris. That's the headline. You see it there? May's £27 billion spending booby trap for Boris. This is about May giving a windfall to schools as she departs number 10 Downing Street. It's all about schools, right? That's what she's going to do. And the Sunday Telegraph speculates that this will make it difficult for Boris Johnson if he becomes leader of the Tories and Prime Minister. The Sunday Telegraph is saying that he'll have no dosh, that he'll find it difficult to do anything because May will have spent all the dosh on her legacy, if you believe that. That's in the Sunday Telegraph today. We're coming up for 12 minutes past 11. You might be listening on Fab Radio. Trigger warning, richieallen.co.uk or TuneIn Radio. But if you are, you can pop on over to YouTube and you can watch me fumble around with the newspapers here. That's the Telegraph. Shall we leave that? Shall we leave the Telegraph? Yeah, let's leave the Telegraph. What about the Sunday Times? Boris poll surge as rivals pitch for cabinet jobs. Yeah, Esther McVeigh, who was eliminated after the first vote of the parliamentary party. McVeigh has now come out strongly in favour of Johnson today. And more polls by apparently reputable polling companies are showing that, as I mentioned earlier on, that Boris Johnson is a shoe-in of sorts. He's a shoe-in. Again, barring the emergence of some scandal, heretofore unknown, Bojo the Clown will be the country's next Prime Minister. There's also a very interesting story on the front page of the Sunday Times, which I'd like to get into very briefly. It's trans charity put children's secrets online. Now, this is about the very controversial charity, in inverted commas, Mermaids, which is, let me bring you up, I've got a little bit of the story. There it is there, inside the Times. You've got to subscribe to the Times to read it online. I do subscribe to some newspapers for the programme, but I don't subscribe to the Times. Needs must and all of that, you know. You've got to cut your cloth to fit your measure, you know. So that's the Times there. And pictured on the Times is the chief executive of the charity Mermaids. So this is a data breach that is fairly horrendous if you are a parent of somebody, of a child who's got issues around gender dysphoria. So the Times have said today that we found that there's a serious data breach by Mermaids. They've got all these confidential emails from families and from trans children, but the emails were readily available on the Times website to anybody who wanted to read them, including the names of the children, the names of their parents, and contact information for them. But worse again, also readily available to even the most amateurish internet user or browser. You could also find the medical details of these trans children on this website, Mermaids. So there is re-raw August roolia-boolia. Commotion, mayhem, as parents are scrambling to find out what's going on. You see Susie Green there pictured on the story. That's Susie Green and Susie's trans daughter. So in the Times story today, there are comments from parents who have described Mermaids as a cult. As a cult. They've also heavily criticised the leadership of this woman, Susie Green. Now, I've said before, and I mean it, I'm not being mean-spirited here about Mermaids, but Mermaids is a charity in the same way that the campaign against anti-Semitism is a charity. It isn't a charity. It's a lobby group. It's not a charity. It purports to be a charity that supports children going through gender dysphoria, but it's not a charity at all. I've said this before and I'll say it again. It's a lobby group. It's a lobby group. And it's headed up by this woman, Susie Green, who took her child for a gender reassignment operation in Thailand back in, I think the child was under 16 or 16 at the time. It was illegal in the UK at the time. And Mermaids says that medical intervention is absolutely vital for children whom are unhappy with their biological sex, even though National Health Service gender specialists, men and women working for the NHS, say that this is wrong. It's wrong. So Mermaids is not a charity. That's a cuddly thing that's there to help kids that are a bit confused. It is a lobby group and it's pushing hard for medical intervention for young children who might just be confused. Right? And it wants to overturn the NHS, which has a ban on children under 16 being given hormones. And I think it's a dreadful thing. That's just me, Mermaids, okay? I'm not bashing trans people now today or anything like it. I'm just saying this is not a charity. It is a lobby group. It is a sinister thing what's happening with young children and how they're being pushed to consider that they might be this and they might be that and they might not be this. Keep your options open. Let's have drag queen story time. Let's have all this effing garbage, right? And waiting with open arms is this alleged charity, which I think is very dangerous. Okay, so that was the Sunday Times then. Let's get rid of the Sunday Times. What have we got? What else have we got for you? The Star on Sunday, no? Oh, mother of Jesus. My nan fancied Corey Chris first. I'm so old, I know who Corey Chris is. It's Chris Quentin, who used to play. Brian, was it? Was it Brian? It was Brian, wasn't it? Brian Tilsley. No, was it Brian Tilsley? It was. Go on, Rich, go on. Do I get my honorary Salfordian citizenship certificate now for knowing that, do I? No, I get sod all. You get a kick in the arse and a lollipop, son. Did we do the Sunday Express? We did. You see, I told you. I couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery. I told you. I warned you. What are we on next? The Observer. Divided, pessimistic, angry. Survey reveals bleak mood of pre-Brexit UK. So the Observer front page, we're all pissed off apparently. We're all fed up and depressed. We must need medication. Let's get some Prozac for the entire nation. Or let's just put it in the water. We're all fed up. That's according to the Observer. And I've got more on that. We can go inside the Observer with the magic of television, children. Watch this. Huh, there it is. There's the story. I've got to put my spectacles on now while I'm making a spectacle of myself. Are we still streaming on Fab Radio? Trigger warning and all the rest of it, are we? We are. Unbelievable. That's the radio. That's the telly. That's the radio. That's the telly. That's the radio. All right. I'll stop. I know. Ask the future Mrs. Allen. There's never been a bigger idiot or a bigger child than me. I carry on like this all the time. So this is Nosheen Iqbal. Nosheen Iqbal writing in The Observer today that we are a more polarised and pessimistic nation than we have been for decades. And it's all over Brexit, social class and geography. And the survey that she's referring to was carried out by Britain Thinks. And they surveyed over 2,000 people. And 75% of them think that UK politics isn't fit for purpose. You think? You know, some of us reached that conclusion many moons ago. What else? There's more on this. So there you are. Pollster Deborah Mattinson said she was shocked by the findings. I've been listening to people in focus groups since the late 80s. And I cannot recall a time when the national mood was more despairing, broken, sad, worried and angry. But I'd like to meet with people like Deborah Mattinson, because I'm sure this is a smart woman and a well-meaning woman. But there is a reason why people are angry and broken, sad and worried. They are being engineered to be that way. You know, I used to do a newspaper review on The People's Voice some years ago with David Icke. Well, he went through the papers and I sat there and listened to him with great interest. Like one of those nodding dogs, do you remember, on the back seats of cars like this? That was me. That was my introduction to TV. But I was very interested. I didn't interrupt the man because he was very interesting. And he used to draw all these stories from the newspaper and say, look, they're all connected. People are depressed, angry, ashamed, fed up, horrified, hopeless. And it isn't because of bad Manning and because we've got bad politicians or because we've got incompetent politicians. These programmes are all part of a wider programme to destroy society, to destroy families, to destroy interpersonal relationships between people, to detach us from one another, and to make it so that our only interaction with one another is conflict. That's what these programmes are designed to do. It's not a far-right programme. It's not a far-left programme. We assign labels to all of these issues. And that's where the system has us by the short and curlies. The short and curlies. It's got us by the short and curlies. Because we don't realise that it is engineered, dreamt up, thought out, written, okay, discussed at a level of eliteness that most of us can't even comprehend. That's where it's all going. Of course, that's how people are feeling all around the world. Excuse me, at the moment, not just in the UK, right? There's a reason for it. Divide and conquer doesn't even cover it. That's where we're going with it. You want me to read a few? You want me to read a few messages, don't you? I'll do that in a minute. Give me a break. I'll do it when I'm ready, is what I'll do. What did we do last? The Times, The Observer, was it? Was it? I'll read some comments then. Yeah, all right. Slide myself in there now. Look at that. Yes. Oh, sure. Look at this. Right. Let's read a few comments. Thanks for watching, by the way, and for listening. I've just lost it now. Oh, I couldn't organise. I told you, I couldn't organise. I could not organise me a session in a brewery. Right, here we go. Have I got the live chat? Let me go all the way back. So hi to AU Kekovic to 26, to Mo Lester. I think Mo might have been listening in Canada. I've lost all the earlier chats, by the way. I had them all, so I'm sorry about that. The ones that came in early. To Walter Hess, to Steve Bennett, to Sean Mack, to Bass Ninja. Do this every Sunday view. This is a good thing. No, I prefer the radio. I've got a face for radio. Philip Blair, how you doing, Philip? To Jason Conan, to Monty Mole, to Patrick Vidian. Gender reassignment is an offence to humanity, he says. Listen, individuals are entitled to do what individuals want to do. Joe Public is sad that I knew that Chris Quinton played Brian Tilsley. I know. Well, when I grew up, there were four channels. There was RTE1. There was RTE2. That's a radio telefiche-sharon. August Radio telefiche-sharon ado. And you had HTV Wales. And you had BBC Wales. That's what we got. Then we got BBC Two. And we got those because the aerials were able to pick them up from Wales. So you didn't have very much. So on HTV Wales, we saw Coronation Street and we thought it was great. Lovely. Hi to Randy Garcia. Hi to Gail. How you doing, Gail? Good morning. You nutter, she says. There's never been a more rational radio presenter than myself. Hi to Martin Coombs. 5G set to kill 2 billion people. Yes, Martin, slowly. Slowly, undoubtedly, my friend, we've talked a lot about it on my programme, haven't we, on the radio programme. Let's go on. Paul Phillips, how you doing, Paul? To anybody joining us from the radio show, good morning, by the way. It's 24 minutes past 11. This is Sunday View. And, right, I've got to leave the comments there then. We're going to move on. We're going to go inside the newspapers now. We're going to go inside. Yeah, all the comments that came in before 11:15, I can't see them. And one or two people made a super chat donation. So thank you very much for that. Don't think I'm a horrible old bastard now that I won't say thanks to you. I just can't see the earlier comments. I lost them all. I don't know how it works. I lost I'm streaming this on my phone silently so I can see your comments. And then I lost the stream, and then I rebooted it and I lost all the earlier comments, so I apologise. Yeah, we're still streaming on the radio as well. Eh? Eh? Couldn't be worse. If you're listening to it on the radio, it's absolutely garbage, right? So let's go inside the papers. Let's go inside the papers. And we can do that through the magic of television, is what we can do. Through the magic of YouTube live streaming. We can talk about misogyny in the Sunday Mail. The Mail on Sunday. Oliver Holt is a football journalist. And he worked for the Daily Mirror for many years. Well, he's a sports writer, but I think football is predominantly is where you would see him. Who speaks like that? You would ordinarily see him writing about football, right? Foosball. Now, the Women's World Cup is on at the moment. I caught the last 15 minutes of the England-Argentina game on Friday. And I was happy to see England win the game 1-0 and make it to the last 16 of the tournament. And it would appear that the live viewing audiences for the Women's World Cup in the UK are very healthy. And good. Us football people, we lament summertime because our league football, the teams we watch, our live fix every weekend is gone during the summer unless we have a World Cup or a European Championship. So the Women's World Cup is a welcome thing. And hi to Cunnington Twat Waffle for that lovely donation of $25 Australian. Thank you very much, mate. That's lovely. Really appreciate that. Now, so anyway, Oliver Holt has written an opinion piece this morning in the Mail on Sunday. And he has said, as you can see, that the Women's World Cup is shining a light into the well of misogyny that still bores deep into the fabric of this country. What a negative Nelly. You negative Nelly, Oliver. You'll never get anywhere in life with that attitude. He's saying that because some men are making jokes about the women's foosball on Twitter, and not only making jokes about the women who play, but making jokes about the women who broadcast it. He says, it shows that there's a big well of misogyny. And just in case he gets called a virtue signaller, which he is, he begins his article by saying, I'm about to indulge in an epic bout of virtue signalling. And apparently some men, or one man, who's, I wonder, was it John who does it for me on Twitter? But some men have taken screen grabs of the ladies in the television studio who do the commentary on the football. Some men have taken a screen grab of the women and have inserted irons into their hands so that it looks like they're standing pitch side talking about the Women's World Cup matches, but it looks like they've got irons in their hands. And Oliver Holt says this is evidence of a deep well of misogyny in the UK. What a pile of horse manure. The viewing figures have never been healthier for women's football in this country. Women's football matches in the Women's Premier League regularly fill out the venues where it is played and is now shown on BT Sport here in the UK and elsewhere. There is no deep-rooted misogyny. And I'm not going to indulge in a bout of virtue signalling, but I have seen, as somebody who loves football, a steady increase. No, I can't say increase. A steady improvement in the quality of women's football over the last 3, 4, 5 years as loads of money has gone into it. This guy is saying that we've got more from Holt, haven't we? Yeah, he goes on, he talks about the iron incident, and he goes on to talk about people who love sport get it wherever they can, and Bill Shankly would have went to Everton on a Saturday if Liverpool weren't playing, and all of that. It's just a nonsensical bit of virtue signalling from Oliver Holt, when he should be celebrating the fact that most men who love their football are watching this Women's World Cup. We are being entertained by it. The standard is excellent. It must be said, it really is, because the women's game has been professional now for some years. Very good. And more men are going to watch it at the weekend during the season. Why? Because we are being priced out of it by our greedy, effing, horrible football clubs that want to charge us 50, 60 or 70 pounds per game. That's just to get in. A fiver for a programme. And I can't afford that, right? And if you want to get a beer, you get a lukewarm, piss-poor bottle of beer in a plastic bottle and they charge you £5 for that. Go and watch the women in the Women's Premier League and you might pay £10 or less for a ticket. The standard is excellent, right? And you're not getting all of that. You know, you're not getting fleeced from the moment you arrive till the moment you leave. Now, as the women's game gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, further down the line, we might see the fleecing that we get at the men's game. But at the moment, the women's game is brilliant. It's positive. We don't need morons like Oliver Holt saying negative things like it's showing up this deep-rooted well of misogyny. Horse manure. Men are watching it all over the country and they're enjoying it. And if one guy decides to stick an iron in the hands of Gabby Roslin or Alex Scott and laugh and go, this is what they should be doing, that's not misogyny. That's just an old joke. It's not funny. Not because it's misogynistic. It's not funny because we've seen it a million times. Right? Okay. It's ridiculous. That sort of rubbish. Virtue signalling. Oh, look, I love the women's game. I'm not misogynistic. Piss off. Jog on. Time is 28 minutes to 12, at least as I can tell here, on a Sunday View. Rubbish from Oliver Holt there. Now, I want to talk about this. This is more serious. Today is the third anniversary of the murder of the MP Joe Cox. And it's been covered widely this morning. And Joe's sister, Kim Ledbetter, whom I have a little bit of time for. I've seen her do quite a few television interviews and comes across as a nice woman. I think she's misguided, Kim Ledbetter, in what she wants to see in terms of how they want to change how public discourse is carried out and all the rest of it. But Caroline Lucas has written for The Independent. Now, I don't like Caroline Lucas very much, and I certainly don't like the woman pictured to the right of Kim Ledbetter there. That, of course, is, you know who that is, don't you? Jess Phillips, in case you don't know. That's Jess Phillips, right? And she's a Labour MP, and she's not a very nice person either. And that's being kind to Jess Phillips. These are the people who want to basically have people locked up, deplatformed, banned, prosecuted for saying stupid things on social media. Not Kim Ledbetter now, but Jess Phillips. So writing in The Independent today and using the third anniversary of the murder of Joe Cox, Caroline Lucas is calling for a big change in our political culture and mentions in her article obviously the terrible fate that befell Joe Cox, but also linking that to people like Boris Johnson and people like say it for me, Nigel Farage. So this is nasty stuff by Caroline Lucas. You see, at this pivotal moment in Britain's history, those of us who believe in a better society must come together, common ground, and wrench the story of our future out of the hands of Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson. So what they're doing is, subtly, but not so subtly really, is they are linking the murder of Joe Cox, and they are linking far-right extremism and threats with conservative politicians like Farage and like Boris Johnson. It's a worthless piece of virtue signalling in The Independent. You can read it for free online if you want, as is The Guardian free, but it's all there for anybody who wants to see it if you want to read it, right? So There she is. Okay. Compassion in politics, she's pushing. And a sea change in how debate is conducted online and all the rest of it. Now, when I think of what happened to Joe Cox, which must have been a rotten thing for Joe Cox and her family to learn about, I think of Thomas Mayer. And I can't help but think of Thomas Mayer, the man who's rotting in jail for the murder of Joe Cox, this man here. Now, Thomas Mayer was... This happened on the 16th of June, 2016. So only a week before the in-out European Union referendum. You remember this, of course. And there are so many things wrong with the arrest and the subsequent conviction of this man. Now, I've never subscribed to the theory that Joe Cox, her murder was some sort of hoax, and that it never happened. Now, because I don't know anything, I don't ridicule or I don't mock those who claim it was some sort of hoax. I don't do that. Pull this over here a bit. Maybe it might be better. No, it's in the way. Sorry for the noise there, radio listeners. I don't do that. You know, you can claim whatever you want about it. I don't know. So if I don't know, I can't dismiss and throw out the notion that it never happened. But I believe it did happen. And I don't find it easy to say to my audience that I think it might have been carried out by people whom were desperate to influence the result of the referendum. I don't say that easily. I really don't, because it's very difficult to prove that. All you can do as a journalist and as a broadcaster is do what I did 3 years ago, which is say there are a number of grave and serious anomalies with the Thomas Mayer story. And I won't get into any great detail in it here, but you'll know if you've listened to the programme over the years, and if you listen to it going back to June 2016, you'll know that there wasn't even a drop of blood on Thomas Mayer, this man, when he was arrested. You'll know that, because he wasn't arrested at the scene, you'll know that there was no DNA evidence belonging to Thomas Mayer at the scene of the murder of Joe Cox. That would be impossible, really, wouldn't it? They didn't need the DNA evidence in the court case, because it really was, in my opinion, the definition of a kangaroo court. He should have never been put on trial to begin with. But no DNA evidence. The trial was heavily prejudiced against Mayer. Nobody could convince me, and I think I said this quite a lot during the trial itself, nobody could convince me that Thomas Mayer could get a fair trial. Nobody could convince me that you could select in the UK an impartial jury. It was impossible to find an impartial jury because of the media poisoning of the jury pool. Everybody in the country knew that this guy was a far-right extremist, or at least the media told us he was anyway, and that he was a neo-Nazi. He was painted as a sort of a lunatic, a fringe far-right nutjob. No jury could honestly say that they hadn't been tainted or contaminated. And I talked about that a lot. Go back to the programmes. They're all on iTunes and Spotify and Podomatic, of course. And you remember the media coverage of it. I talked about it on the day that he was arrested. They had all this information about him, about how he was far right and he was a Nazi. Nobody knew anything about the guy. But within hours, they had this narrative, this speech. They had this profile picture built up of Thomas Mayer. And they were all singing from the same hymn sheet that evening. And nobody that knew the man, of course, believed any of this. You know, we said this again going back to the shows around that particular murder. His family, his friends, said this guy was an animal lover. He was a nice fella. He didn't have any extremist views, they said. He was quiet, he was decent, he was lovely. He walked people's dogs. He was a community man. He gardened. He was just a decent fella. He volunteered at charities, didn't he? Didn't we learn that at the same time? He was a decent bloke. And all of a sudden, you know, one of the local newspapers interviewed him, didn't they? About his own mental health issues. His depression. And how he had a holistic, if I remember, a holistic way of tackling depression and stuff like that. This was just a good bloke. And all of a sudden, we were told he was a far-right extremist. And he managed to keep those feelings, that hatred for people and for immigrants, away from everybody who knew him. And as I said, on the day of the murder, and I played a lot of the clips at the time because they were so eerily similar, the Beeb, Channel 4, Sky, had an in-depth profile of Thomas Mayer, showing that he was a racist lunatic. Identical stories. It was like somebody handed him a script. It was very similar after the New Zealand shooting recently. And I'm not saying that the shooter in New Zealand didn't do it at all. But they had the script ready to go, didn't they? And that's where I kind of leave it. There is so much wrong with that story. And today is the third anniversary of the death of Joe Cox. And the media is lapping it up. And people like Caroline Lucas and Jess Phillips and others are coming out demanding that people be gagged and that platforms be shut down and that people be arrested for saying things online. And of course, they've mentioned Jo Brand, the comedienne, and the things that she said last week in jest, however distasteful you might have found it. The things that Jo Brand said about Nigel Farage and acid and all of that. So, look, I'll leave it there, that particular story. But you can read that online on The Independent. And I should read a few comments now. And then I want to talk a little bit about something Peter Hitchens has written in the Mail on Sunday today. Okay. Lovely. There's a lot of messages there. Bex Hill, how you doing, Bex? Right, okay. Okay, look, there's a million messages on there. Just go on there and read them. Some of them are being held for review. It's not me doing that, by the way. I'll show them anyway. I don't delete comments. I don't spend any time on YouTube outside of this. I have a mate called Rog. That'll be Roger with a D. And he looks after all of that. Right. There is an interesting story by Peter Hitchens. Shall we have a look at that? Shall we? Shall we? Shall we? Can I get it up there? Peter Hitchens. And it is in the Mail on Sunday. It's an opinion piece. And here it is. So, Peter writes about the licence fee. And it's very good. But I'm not going to talk about the licence fee. We're going to talk about that article. Okay? So he talks about the licence fee. And he gets into why he believes it's untenable for us to be paying the licence fee. And he believes it's untenable because of the lack of impartiality in the BBC and because the BBC is patently not fair and it is not unbiased. It is very biased. And I'm delighted with Peter Hitchens today. So I am. Because he introduces Syria into his story. Okay? So this is some of the article there. It talks about church-going Christians who believed in the BBC. And he says the BBC kind of frowns on patriotic Christians and, you know, older people who would have traditional views. Hitchens says the BBC kind of makes a mockery of them, that it's BBC policy to kind of isolate people with a more traditional Christian kind of conservative view. Now, I don't have a traditional Christian or conservative view, but I agree with Peter Hitchens. And I'm going to put this on screen and I'm going to read from you I'm going to read for you some of the article. So this is Hitchens talking about the BBC. Let me read this for you while it's on screen. This is very important. Okay, so you know what the OPCW is, don't you? It's the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. OPCW. So I'm going to read Hitchens verbatim. One day, the letters OPCW could be as well known as the initials WMD, and for similar reasons. Everyone now knows there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and the war we fought there was a disastrous crime. Indeed, it was. But lots of people were fooled. In the modern world, the only way to get a democracy into a war is to deceive kind, gentle people into thinking they are acting against an outrage. Sometimes these outrages are faked. Now, it may be happening again. Love this man. In a strange toadstool-shaped building in Den Haag, in The Hague, a huge row is raging, which could one day decide whether the world goes to war or stays at peace. The building is the headquarters of the OPCW, Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The row, as far as we can find out through rival leaks, is between some technical experts who doubt that Syria's tyrant, Bashar Assad, in fact used poison gas in April 2018, and others who believe that he did use such gas. The OPCW's political chiefs seem to want very badly to believe that he did use that gas. This would suit several of the governments that pay for the existence of the OPCW. So the OPCW, according to Peter Hitchens, and he's right, desperately wants people to believe that Assad used poison gas. We know he didn't. But they want people to believe it. The OPCW is under constant political pressure, most famously the current US National Security Advisor, John Bolton. Here comes the walrus. Bolton is accused of having openly demanded the resignation of the OPCW's former chief, José Bustani, in 2002, because they disagreed about Iraq. But Mr. Bustani declined to go quietly. According to the New Yorker magazine, John Bolton, then an Under Secretary of State, told the Brazilian diplomat, quote, "We know you have two sons in New York. We know your daughter is in London. We know where your wife is." This is John Bolton. John Bolton said that to me, and I'm just tiny little Richie Allen with no influence. If he threatened my wife, my daughter and my children, I would be on the nearest plane to Washington, D.C. I would spend weeks, if I could, trying to figure out how I could get John Bolton on his own with any security team. And I won't say what I would do to him. Neocon Zionist thugs in control of Washington, D.C. then and now. So Bolton tried to get rid of this guy back in 2002 because they wouldn't believe the WMD bull spit. Now the same people want you to believe that Assad gassed his own people. And Peter Hitchens writes, I'll continue. Now, as I wrote here almost a month ago, the OPCW is in turmoil again. A leaked document shows at least one of its expert employees had grave doubts about Assad's responsibility for the alleged gas attack in Douma in 2018. I believe there are other dissidents who dare not speak out publicly yet. It casts doubt on the legality of a joint US, British and French missile attack on Syria, supposedly in retaliation for this attack. Western newspapers and broadcasters, apart from the Mail on Sunday and The Independent, have only just begun to cover this. Well, Peter, if you paid attention to the Richie Allen show, or even RT, and other independent and alternative news sources, we were casting doubt on it using facts back in 2018. But thank you, Peter. At least you're on the case now. The BBC, to its shame, rights, Peter Hitchens, has yet to touch it, even though the OPCW's chief, Fernando Arias, confirmed it on a public stage to the BBC security correspondent Frank Gardner on June 6th in Bratislava. It is all very well being wise after the event over WMD. Now, we know all about this. We know all about the debunking of the Panorama show that claimed that Assad had used chemical weapons against his own people. We know all about it. Talking about it for over a year and going way back. But brilliant shaming of the BBC by Peter Hitchens today in his Mail on Sunday article. It's a shock and disgrace. It's a shock and disgrace that the BBC would ask anybody to pay for a license to watch its propaganda. Right? Right. Brilliant. That's free to read. Go to mail. Go to mail. Dailymail.co.uk. Excuse me. Dailymail.co.uk. It's free to read. And share it with people. Hitchens is right. It's all out there for anybody who wants to see it. Or anybody who wants to read it. Bashar al-Assad did not gas his own people. Any use of chlorine gas was used by the enemies of Syria. And those enemies are the intelligence agencies of Israel, France, the United Kingdom and the United States. If there was chlorine gas used in the first place. Because we know we can't believe the White Helmets. We know this, don't we? We know who the White Helmets are because, again, I've been talking about this for over 3 years on my programme. Brilliant stuff by Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday. Thought you were, or you would be interested in that. We're rapidly approaching the end of this programme, by the way. They are covering Iran in the national press today. This is from the Telegraph. And they're all speaking with one voice. It must have been Iran that attacked the tankers. Not only 4 weeks ago, but also on Friday. It must have been. And because so many voices in the independent media have rightly pointed out that Iran wouldn't be stupid enough to do that. Why would it do that? There was nothing to gain. Now they're coming out saying, okay, yes, it might appear stupid for Iran to sabotage itself, but here are the reasons why we think Iran would do it. So it is relentless in the Sunday newspapers today. It is relentless. This pushing that Iran did it, Iran is dangerous, and they are ramping up now this anti-Iranian rhetoric. You know, or you might know, that Royal Marines have been sent to the Strait of Hormuz, Hormuz, however you pronounce it. And again, escalating tension with Iran. Where is this all going to end? Well, some smarter people than me have been suggesting this is all going to end with a military conflict, which will escalate over time. I sincerely hope it won't, but that's where we're going, right? And I think that's where we're going. Right, I'm going to love you and leave. I see Sharon Gale is watching. How you doing, Sharon? A pal of mine. Thanks for the donation, Sharon. You of all people don't need to do that. Thank you so much for that. Sharon is a whistleblower, brilliant woman. Has experienced the horrors of forced adoption, of child stealing by the state, and is a great lady. We'll be back on the programme again in future talking about that generally. Check out Sharon Gale online. On YouTube, you'll find her interviews with me, a courageous woman, and it's an honour to know her. So thanks for that, Sharon. That's about the size of it, really. I know it's not quite midday, but I'm going to love you and leave you. I've got loads to do anyway, domestically. Lots going on. So I'm going to crack on with it. That was Sunday View. And it was streaming on the usual channels, but maybe not sounding as well as it ordinarily would, because I'm using a microphone that I wouldn't ordinarily use. And it hasn't been set up for me. It's there for a guest, if there's a guest in the studio. But there you are. That's kind of it, really. Look, enjoy your Sunday. I've got Eric Gajewski coming on the programme tomorrow, Monday. And Eric is going to be with me. I'm really looking forward to that. Eric is Tradcat Night, by the way. I'm going to be talking about Christianity and Catholicism. And I'm going to be talking about Eric in general and how he's gotten into his area of research. It's going to be a kind of a get-to-know-you chat with Eric Gajewski on Monday's programme. That's at 5 o'clock UK time. But I'll be with you before that, because you and me will chat at 9:30 tomorrow morning That's Monday, tomorrow at 9:30 UK time, when I look through the newspapers, as I always do on Monday to Friday at 9:30. So until then, sorry for the haphazard nature of this today. I told you. Don't expect any technical marvels. Don't expect any broadcasting smoothness and finesse on this YouTube live stream. But look, it is what it is, and I have fun doing it. So it's coming up to 4 minutes to midday. Love you and leave you. Graham Booth might be going live on triggerwarning.tv now. If you are, Graham, good stuff. Get on to triggerwarning.tv. Check out Graham Booth. And there's plenty of other stuff on triggerwarning.tv as well. And for alternative radio, that is superb. Go to fabradiointernational.com. I'm fonder of nobody more than my great mate Paul Ripley in Manchester. Speak to you tomorrow at 9:30. Until then, bye for me.